Tonight on VH1's Behind the Podcast, the untold story of the Muskie 360 Podcast. The boys from the Muskie 360 Podcast came from humble beginnings. Stephen Paul was unfortunate enough to be born into a family in West Virginia, where his father was a surgeon and his lowly mother was an attorney. Things could not have been any worse. JSE was cut from the same cloth as his father, only owned two small airplanes. It seemed like being born on the wrong side of the tracks brought these two hooligans together.
When Stephen and I started the podcast, it was simply about the art. The art, man. I mean, it's all it was. Now, look what it's turned into. Pepsi's an abuse.
I don't know what that wanker's talking about. I've written every podcast, every single word on every podcast, and that wanker wants to take credit for my work of every podcast I've ever written, every world tour. That wanker doesn't know nothing about Muskies.
Obviously now, there is no love lost between Stephen and Jay. But for one brief moment, they were the biggest stars in the podcast world. But things changed in the 1980s when Pepsi hit the Muskie scene.
This is Ricky Bobo. Back in the 80s, my name was Ivan Boner. I was a podcast roadie for all the Muskie 360 podcasts. Every show, every city, I was there screaming, Stephen Paul! Jay was in a really dark place during the mid-80s, and the podcast was a number one hit. Every new town, it was who's going to load Jay's toad. Every show, he had me looking for local toad loaders. I was spending more time scouting for big girls and setting up the podcast arena tour. Jay only had one thing in mind. Every city we hit, what big girl was going to load his toad? Yee-yee!
And there's to you, Mrs. Toadinson. Heaven holds a place for those that pray. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey.
I knew things were going sideways when Steve had his big solo hit, Mrs. Toadinson. I was caught in the throes of Pepsi addicted at this time, but not very long after he also got hooked.
Hi, this is Josh. You might know me as the South American Snowman. I was a roadie for the Muskie 360 boys for a few years back in their heydays. One time the boys were on tour, and we hit off with Ozzy. Not Ozzy Osbourne, even worse. Ozzy Knutson. Ozzy peed in the Freshwater Hall of Fame, and then he snorted an entire bottle of Powerade.
Regardless of their early disputes and Steve's very brief solo career, the Muskie 360 boys continued to pump out the classic hits. How could you forget about Structure Fishing Masterclass 1 and 2, Trolling Masterclass, or Use Your Illusion?
Point was non-stop. Rock and roll all night and jig every day was the motto. I once saw Steve passed out in the bathtub of Holiday Inn, strung out on Titans. I had to hit him in the face with a headlock just to bring him back to reality.
At this point, the Muskie 360 boys knew it was time to refocus on what really mattered: muskie fishing.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast World Tour 1987.
Steven!
Wait, thanks, Jay. I gave her everything I had there, bud.
That was great.
That was the best I had. 1987.
And I learned so much of the backstory, too. I mean, come on.
We've come back around. We sort of kumbaya'd. We're back together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's the best you can do.
Full circle.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars of worth of therapy.
And, yeah.
And we can do an hour a week and tolerate one another.
No, you skipped the part two about me going to the speech therapist trying to lose my Northwoods accent, too.
Either gay. That's the next one where we get in a battle of who has a worse accent, right?
I gotcha. Okay.
There's friction there. That's behind the podcast number two. Anyway, I am in the wrong business. Hands down. Me quit. Me quit. Me quit.
Please tell.
You know what? Muskie fishing is dumb. It's the road to poverty. So me and Josh Krieger, he's sitting right here. Say hi, Josh.
Hey, everyone. How you guys doing?
Hey, Josh. Me, Josh. So me and Josh Krieger worked the Livingston booth this week at the Bassmasters Classic. Holy crap, I'm an idiot. Muskie fishing is stupid. Well, you know, 90,000 people in the business, or in the building, excuse me, this week, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, sounds crazy.
Got to meet the KVD. Kevin Van Dam.
And Bill Dance.
Hot damn, Kevin Van Dam. Me and Krieger met Bill Dance.
Whew.
It was hot, buddy. Hank Cherries, it was ridiculous. Randy Howe, who's going to do the bash in Minocqua, Wisconsin this year.
Mm-hmm.
It blew my mind. The sheer opulence of that event blew my mind. It was never ending.
Mm-hmm.
Boats. And we're talking, me and Josh were with the Skeeter display. Skeeter boats.
Phoenix, too.
Phoenix. A million-dollar display would be an understatement on all these things, where you go thing and you're going, okay, there's $150,000, $200,000 boat. Man, bass fishing's crazy. That's awesome.
Sure. Yeah.
It was shocking. You know, I've been to a lot of musky shows over the years, begrudgingly, because I hate them, right? This thing was the Super Bowl of fishing shows.
That's what they call it that, exactly.
We walked a mile and a half to get there, because parking was so bad, early in the morning, by the way. And it took us 35 minutes to get to the booth we were working, right? So Josh and me are both Livingston Pro staff. We were working that booth all day long. Met a lot of great people. If we saw you at the booth, there's a lot of people that came up there like, hey, Steve, hey, Josh. They knew us at the booth. Thank you so much. I'll tell you what. Until about 6 o'clock, I've never wanted to be out of a building more in my life. It was claustrophobic. That was insanity. So big respect to that bass world of, wow, there's a lot of people that bass fish. So,
sure.
It was a bit much. But anyway, Josh is down. He came down. He worked the classic with me. He's sitting in on the podcast. Stupid, stupid, stupid intro, Jay. I apologize. Jay's like, why did it take so long? It's because we've been Pepsi-ing, buddy.
Yep.
You know, it happens.
Well, sometimes it's worth it.
Sometimes it's worth it. Not when I get up at 9 in the morning. So, anyway, guys, big news. Titan Jr., the replenishment is on the way, right? So if you don't have one and you didn't get the car you want, they're coming up here shortly. You know, the big Titans, we got a bunch of new cars of those still in stock. The other thing I was going to mention, I went by their booth and I saw it in person. This Shimano Jackal Blast Bone Jr. Long name, right?
Yeah, the Blast Bone, right? We just got them in, yeah.
Shimano Jackal Blast Bone Jr. How about we just call it the JB Jr. or something? Nonetheless, pretty cool bait. Saw it. Great sort of like surface bait. Great kind of wake bait. Hello. Pretty interesting. So yeah. That's going on there. Other than that, Jay, what is the Northwoods weather report? What's going on? Is it iced up? Is it nasty? Is it disgusting?
Is it iced up? Yeah. Yeah, Steve, it's iced up.
How iced up?
A lot of ice, a lot of snow. I don't know. They're talking highs in the 30s all week, so a limited amount of melting. I wish it would progress a little bit quicker, but it's going to take a little time this year.
Jay's got out his blowtorch.
Yeah, they're still ice fishing, you know.
Well, you know, not for me. So it's crazy down here. Josh, it's hot as hell, isn't it?
Oh, man, like 75 degrees on the water today.
It's scary.
You're going to have heat stroke, Josh. You're not used to that. That's crazy.
Oh, it's going to be a whole new world coming back up to northern Wisconsin here.
He left 12 yeah. and came to 80. It was, there's that weird, like, mid-American band where, you know, your Kentucky, West Virginia is sort of stuck somewhere in the middle. The South is really hot. The North is really cold. Which every year, guys, I'm going to tell you, as the crazy note keeper I am, it's going to be a late ice out.
And it's looking that way for us.
You look this way and you go, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention. People go, oh, it's different every year. It's crazy. It's 2017. For those of you keeping notes, look at your notes for 2017. For those who have not kept notes, I'm sorry. I'm not going to tell you the details. It is 2017 in repeat. So, flash forward, start keeping notes. Relatively the same pattern. We had the same thing happen 2017, right? So, we had a very late ice out up north, a slow bite to start, and then things went ballistic in July. Your southern habitat range, you had a split spawn or non-spawn in a lot of locations. Muskies held on their eggs. We have drawdowns in the south, believe it or not, right?
Yeah.
And so you got falling water levels. You got quarry engineers, TVA, whatever it might be. They're pulling the water down. Muskies have egg weight, and they go, oh, there is no spawnable habitat range right now. And they're holding on, right? So there's something to be considered there. 2017 in repeat. I'm not going to tell you everything because if you're not being keeping notes, not my problem. Start keeping notes today. Huh? Huh? Jot it down, Jay. Jot it down.
Write that down.
Write it down, okay. Buddy. Get your pen and paper. What is the water temp? What is the weather? What is this? What is that? Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, other than that, I think talking spawn, we're talking ice out. Josh Krieger's here. There's nobody better to talk about early season, right?
Yep,
I think it's important for us to start focusing on this because we're in the early season down here. We're a couple months ahead of the Northwoods. That's it, right? Whether we like it or not, 55, 56 degree water temps in the south. You guys are going to be facing it here very shortly. I've been catching some fish where we look at what matters. Post-spawn, early season, season opener, wherever you might be. Not many places have a season anymore. We were talking about that today.
Yeah, I think it's just Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Right. You know, Illinois, open. Michigan, open.
It's just Minnesota and Wisconsin are the last two.
Right.
No kidding.
Maybe. I don't know. If you live in a state and you don't know, don't count on us. Right? There's been some Pepsi. True. There's been a Pepsi or 10 tonight. So, but, you know, it's something to look at. You know, West Virginia, open. Ohio, open. You can fish them pre, you can fish them post. But when we get into the spawn, what's going on, right? What's going on, really? It's been mythical. It's been magical. People have talked a lot about it, but they've said nothing factual. So, things that dictate the spawn in my mind, right? Water temperature, photo period. What is photo period? That is duration of light in the course of a day, right? So as days grow longer, muskies know this is our cue to spawn, right? In conjunction with water temperature. Now, what I've heard since I was a little musky guy, I'm tiny, is that 55 is the magic number, right? Is 55 the number? Is it 55 surface temp? Is it 55 a foot down? Is it 55 15 feet down? No one knows, right?
Or is it 55 for three consecutive days, right, not just what, one day?
Right. Yeah. What is it? That's an arbitrary target. However, what we're looking for is staging, right? Are muskies actually staging shallow? And again, nobody has the answer. 55 shallow, 55 a foot down, like you said, 55 sustained temperatures. What is it? Is it photo period? There's a litany of conditions, a litany of situations that come into play. Everybody in water differs.
Oh, it differs just from where you're at on a body of water.
A tannic body of water. Yeah. Right? A tannic body of water for you guys, when the ice comes off, gonna get warmer faster. The north end of a body of water, gonna get warmer faster, right? So let's say, for argument's sake, because there's so many variables, let's just agree that we're post-spawn. Let's do the podcast. We got a little bit of time. Jay's got a very important meeting later this evening. He's got to get to, right? Mr. Sleepy Time. Meet Tie. Jay, you're telling me you can't run on 1 hour of sleep tomorrow?
Come on. It's so simple.
Me simple. So let's pretend. Let's do the podcast based on 1 week, 2 week, and 3 weeks removed from the spawn. Okay. So I'm going to fire it off. 1 week post-spawn, what am I doing? What I'm doing, right, is that first week post-spawn, weather, and the thing is this, with late ice out, you guys could see fish that spawn right when you can get on the water. Or you might see fish that spawn in June. You don't know. It depends. I've seen ice outs. You know this, Jay. Josh, you know this. The ice out comes late, but then we have super hot temps, and it skyrockets. Right? It's a moving target. Week one, post-spawn. Females are generally uncatchable, in my opinion. Right? The big girls. In my brain, what those females do, they come in, they spawn, and they go deep to recoup, right? That's my opinion. What I'm targeting at that point is mid-sized males, 35s, 38s, 41s, 42s, somewhere in that neighborhood, right? They've been bit, they've been chomped on, they've gone through the process, they're trying to recoup. What are they trying to recoup? Shallow water, warmer zones, right? Very close to spawning grounds. Well, where do these things spawn? In my experience, been northern zones, the warmer section of the lakes that warm up first, in tributaries, creek beds, and shallow zones, right? So how am I targeting those fish? I'm targeting them with, generally, shallow raiders, 5-inch, right? Small slammers, sure. Small blades. You know, this is the time of year where I've got a little bit of a selection of giant killers on my boat. I've got a little selection of tiny meps, you know, musky killers, giant killers, whatever else, RJs. I've got small presentations. The southern thing, the hillbilly thing to do, is to break out the rattle traps, right? Throw them out, reel them in. That's the straight retrieve side of the things. 6-inch phantoms, slow it down, right? Bam, bam, hang time. Bam, bam, hang time. Bang, bang, hang time. Followed by your Titans. You know, the Titan Junior, that's what this is for. Pull it down, let it hang. Pull it down, let it hang. I've had probably one of the best weeks of my life on Titan Juniors, by the way. I'm not talking best weeks on Titan Junior. I'm talking best weeks on the water on Titan Juniors, right? A couple back-to-back 50s, a couple 48s, a 49 and a quarter, a couple big fish hitting the boat this week, just bam, bam, bam. You know, just hitting them where it's that very suspended, that very death pause, that very neutral presentation where I'm not trying to talk these fish into hitting. I'm just going, I dare you. I dare you. Gonna do it? Bam, bam, pause. Bam, 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 pause. That's my thought process in that post-spawn 1-5 zone, right? When I get outside of that, rubber, shallow rubber though, right? I'm not throwing shallow rubber shallow. I'm throwing shallow rubber in a suspended manner. Pull, extended hang time. Pull, extended hang time. Where my brain goes, that's week one post-spawn. Josh, you're sitting here. Let's say, for example, in some of these tannic bodies of water or some of these bodies, let's say we get on them. You've had it before. We've talked about it. Like, you know the spawns happen. The ice is out. We're dealing with post-spawn directly after opener. Like, because I think of the DNR up there, they're perfect. In the perfect world, the muskie would spawn. We have 2 weeks and then it opens.
Correct, yeah.
But most, some years it's before, some years after. Let's pretend it's 1 week. What is the take 1 week post-spawn there?
Well, I know a lot of guys up, they'll throw small bucktails that time of the year. Obviously, small presentation is an important factor. However, I think it's more important to use those baits like you're talking about that are going to catch those negative and neutral fish. Those negative and neutral fish seem to be more prevalent as far as fish that are around. They're not super active. So, yeah, I like those slower retrieve baits, those kind of hang time baits. That Titan Junior is money. Like you mentioned, the shallow raiders, I'm with you on that. I like those better than those small bucktails. Like I said, a lot of guys up there throw them. They work.
It's sort of like my feelings on rattle traps.
Right.
Rattle traps in the South are the straight retrieve. Buh, buh.
Right. And they work.
Right,
they work
right. I'm guys. Drooling on myself the entire time, but I'm throwing it out and reeling it in.
Right. Yep.
What, Jay? What do you think? What was that? I'm drooling.
You just said you're drooling on yourself the entire. It's just not exciting enough for you. Is what you're telling me.
Right. Yeah. You've eaten enough lead paint to launch your boat, and now you're throwing a rattle trap. Me dumb.
Well, yeah. Time and place, and that's certainly the time and place down there is springtime in the South. It's just a proven track record. Yeah.
Nonetheless, I'm not gonna do it. Bore me mm-hmm. to the moon and let me catch no fish. I'll auto tune that later. I'm sorry.
Auto tune it.
Me being dinky. So me dinky a bunch, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so refocusing. it's that same thing of that, and I love Joe. I caught him today. We're talking guitar earlier. Yeah, you can catch one or two on the Booger 500 up shallow or this.
Mm-hmm.
Finesse it, right? There's going to be days where you go, hey, low hanging clouds, things are perfect. We can hit them on the major, things are looking good. We can get them on that straight retrieve. Don't crutch on it, though. And again, dudes, I'm teasing. I like a rattle trap early in the season. That's my sun up. That's my sundown. That's my major minor presentation. The rest of the time, we can't just sit here and go, me throw, me reel, me throw, me reel. Get fish, right? You just can't do it. You know, where Josh, I think what you're doing is like, there's a time and a place. However, we need to finesse a little bit more.
Absolutely. I think baits are, you got to look at them like tools, and you got to have the right tool for the job.
Just like Jay, he's a tool.
there's just certain situations where certain baits are going to work better for you.
I'm not listening. Go ahead.
Yeah, fair. I mean, what are some like that ice out, we're into musky season? Because there's a lot to be said about, about the downsized baits, mm-hmm. but they're more bass size. I mean, what do you rely on as far as like that early season, first week out? What's the 1 week baits that you're thinking about?
I'll throw, you know, small glide baits, kind of small phantoms or the tiny, you know, tap dancers, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The Titan Junior, obviously, like we mentioned, smaller. And you've been
you prototyped this season, which the Titan Junior was ridiculous.
Yeah, know? Correct. Yeah, correct.
Which was, ooh,
it was pretty awesome. I was
three legs money.
Hammering fish on baits no one else had. You know,
not even fair, folks. But you know, you look at that where. A little bit more speed control, you know, a little, you got to have something where, yes, your straight retrieve 500, your giant killer, your musky killer, your rattle trap, whatever might work. However, we need to be a little focused on something that has hang time seems to be the corollary, right? Hang, stop. I think what's going to be big this year is Titan Junior up north, and I think that little slammer fatty minnow as we progress. Right? So immediately post-spawn, if we're focusing on what we talked about, week one, baits with hang time. Shallow Raider, pop, pop, hang. Titan Junior, pop, pop, hang, right? Where I'm going to be less apt to sort of steer towards, you know, that blade or that rattle trap. Week two, unless, Jay, what are you thinking? Do you fish that early, Jay, very often? What are your thoughts week one post-spawn?
100% agree with you on the technique there on week one with the slow start.
Week two.
With the bait selection.
Right, yeah, right.
I'm with you totally. Yep.
Week two. Let's say we're 2 weeks removed. What changes?
You asking me?
No, I'm just talking. It's a theoretical proposition for all three of us. So if you have something amazing to add, now's the time.
Always do.
Always do. But my thought is week two removed. How do we augment, right? They've had a little recoup. You might catch them. They look banged up as hell, you know, and they're banged up. Mm-hmm. What is going to differentiate from week one, the first 7 days versus the second 7 days post-spawn? I generally see a trend to go a smidge deeper. Right, seeking a not the baseline, the structural, the core stability, but we're still not up here where we spawn. We're eking out a smidge deeper. We're eking out to 5-6. We're holding there, opposed to our backs are out of the water and you can see our fins. Right, what are we doing there? To me, everything we just said, with the addition of lateral presentations to structural edges with shallow rubber. Right? So you're checking these edges, you're checking the what will be the littoral zone, but is not yet the littoral zone with your shallow presentations. Maybe there's some tiny emergent vegetation, there's sprouts, if you will. But that first break where, hey, I'm not going to sit here and suffer. I'm a muskie. Hello. Everybody, I'm a muskie. I'm over. I don't want to really suffer a cold front or suffer a cool down. I'm ready to sort of start adhering again to structural tenants. And I might drop down that first break in a cold front. I might drop down that first break in high bright sun conditions where a slow moving rubber bait or a slow moving glide bait might become a potential, right? Where, like Josh said, phantoms or a Titan Junior might be really potential when these fish are staged maybe 6, maybe to 8 feet, right out of that sort of, I can't see the bottom, right? You can't see the bottom, but they're there now. Now, when things are really good, they're up there warming up a little bit because the reason they stay so shallow is the thermal energy of the shallows overcomes their metabolism, right? The quicker your metabolism, the faster you heal. Anybody that's older than 35 knows, man, I cut myself. This sucks. I'm going to see this cut on my hand for 6 months, right? Right? Your metabolism dictates everything. I nick my finger. Well, me and this Nick are going to be friends until Christmas, right? The older you get, the more you know this. So the control of metabolism becomes important, but they don't want to be super shallow. So it's week two, we're post-spawn, shallow things like a shallow, small bulldog. Not a spring dog, just the standard, the old school shallow dog comes to mind. Again, Titan Junior fishing a lateral to a break line. Josh, what's cracking in your mind is something that, like, for that 6 to 8 foot range in a slow manner.
Yeah, actually, I like mid Medusas a lot as well. They have them in shallow versions or regular, and obviously they're very versatile. The faster you work them, the higher up they stay, of course, and slower you work them, the deeper down they get. So you can work either one of those baits to get to that level. Mm-hmm. The only difference is if you're throwing a shallow one versus a normal one, the shallow one, the sink rate is much slower. So it allows you to work the bait slower and cover the same water as you're covering with the normal mid Medusa. So if the fish are, you know, negative and neutral, mm-hmm. like we're talking, that hang shallow top. Rubber gives you more hang time to convert those negative and neutral fish while you're throwing the same kind of presentation.
Right. And a big rule of thumb for me is, like, shallow does not denote shallow. We've caught fish together, like, yeah. Me and you have, like, literally, and there's a project.
Yeah, it's a little misleading. Right.
It is. There's a project I'm working on right now where I'm writing a bunch of words, tick, 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 on a keyboard. And I go off on a tangent on this one. It should not be denoted shallow men deep.
No, it should be like slow sink or fast
yes,
sink. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And that's guide brain.
Or heavyweight, right. Lightweight. Yeah.
You know, I get a client that can't keep it above weeds. The problem of this, and I'm going to go on a separate tangent here, which is like the reason the spring is a struggle bus for most people is the reeling hand.
They can't slow down enough.
You can't slow down enough. At a certain point, there is a speed for most people to go, this is musky fishing. Me fish.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
This is what muskies want because I saw it on a video. That's it. That reeling hand, you know, there's nothing. You know what? We could do, Jay, we could end the podcast. We could never do another episode. We could do 1 hour on stop reeling. Stop reeling.
Yeah, it's something you see daily.
Daily.
I'm sure. It's just like, you know, you don't want to be rude and just say, you know, you're constantly saying you're reeling too fast.
I want to every damn day. I want to say it.
You know, maybe tell them once and, you know.
You tell them, you go, hey, slow her down. By time three, now you're a gripe, right?
Yeah, watch, like, what I'm doing. Watch how I'm bringing right, in this bait. You know, cadence. Watch how I'm throwing pauses in there and the cadence and the tempo. And it's just got to be slower.
You know, it is not. I'm going to tell you this. When we started this podcast, the joke was I'm half spool Steve, right? Remember, Jay? Half spool
yeah.
Steve.
Yeah, right.
He'll slow down to no end. The reason you're listening to me and the reason you see all these big fish I catch and the reason I've been successful in this business is I'm willing to have speed control. That's it. Whoa. Hello. If you want to do what I have done, get control of your reeling hand. That is the best advice I can give you in the entirety of this podcast from the day we started until now. Get control
yep.
of your
yep.
reeling hand. When you rip rubber, stop reeling on the rip. Reel when you pick up slack. When you're twitching baits, twitch, pick up the slack after the rise. Me and Booker had about an hour-long conversation about this today. You know, and it's just one of these things. I pound the desk and I bring this up because my dear friend said, I've never gotten it across to the people that have read my articles. So I'm doing it for Booker. I'm doing it for me. I'm doing it for Josh. I'm doing it for Jay. Get control of the hand that is turning the handle.
And if mm-hmm. you guys really can't slow your hand down, they do make slower retrieve reels too. So there
yeah,
again, just like
the
baits, right tool
well,
for
yeah,
the job.
There's, you know what?
Use a different reel for spring.
There's two reasons people retrieve too quickly. Number one, the whole industry right now is urging people to get high speed gear ratios for whatever reason. Everyone wants high speed, you know, like Steve said, half spool Steve. Mm-hmm. One of the aspects of that is take some line off, you know?
Yeah.
You just lowered the gear ratio. And number two is that I think a lot of people, they can't feel the bait. They can't feel the vibration right. when they slow down. You know, whether it's a bucktail or especially a crankbait or a bucktail, you know, when they speed it up, they feel the vibration. They think the bait's working correctly, you know. So you got to experiment with twitches and pauses and watch the bait when you're bringing it in, and hopefully got clear enough water where you can visualize that the bait is working at a slower tempo.
Okay, so I'm done with it. Forget this week one, week two, week three crap.
Mm.
I'm going to preach. You ready? Hey, man!
Oh, boy.
Get control. So I've been working on that writing project, Jay. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. Right?
I say it a few times. I don't beat it. I don't belabor it. But everything is encompassed by this caveat of reeling hand control. What is costing the majority of muskies, what I would say 90% of you that you're not catching the muskies you want to catch are suffering from a thing of reelitis. Right? I want nothing more. There's nothing more I want in the world than a hot and heavy topwater follow that ends in some explosion, that the water hits me in the face before I set the hook because of the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life, right?
Yeah.
99.9% of my catches, and I could probably look at my notes because I'm the most diligent record keeper in the muskie game, but I would bet 99% in some odd percentile thereof is subsurface strikes, right? And I would bet a higher percentile of 60% are on baits that are running deeper than 5 feet. And I would bet even a higher percentile of that, as we break this statistical anomaly down tighter and tighter and tighter, become slower presentations of that the entire course of the year. You cannot base the entirety of your muskie career off of July and August north of Chicago. Hello? Josh Krieger, we started working together, we started fishing together. Wake up call, right?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We've talked about it. You dial in, you go, every article, every video, everything you've ever seen, in the muskie business is guys going out and go, it's July, it's August, we're going to catch some, and we are doing X, Y, and Z. We're doing in the epimillion, the upper layer of the water column. We're fishing the littoral zone, and we're going to bang some fish. And that becomes what muskie fishing is, through sheer osmosis or sheer volume of content.
Well, with the number of fish up there, I mean, whether you know what you're doing or not, you're going to bound to, you know, you're bound to tie into a couple.
Yeah.
So.
Doing that.
Yeah,
right.
So yeah, which is you fine. Three in July, you know, I mean, at the end of the day,
and that's
that
a success. Right. Wow. We came up for a week, got three. Okay. Well, outside of July and August, and the reason me and Jay waited, what, 4 years for a podcast on blades is this? The same thing applies to your post-spawn fishing. Do we have control? Can we get control of our reeling hand? Can we be diligent enough that every turn of that handle is deliberate, right? If every foot, every inch, every progression of our bait is a deliberate endeavor, we're going to have far higher success post-spawn.
Guys, I've seen it firsthand. You know, the first couple years, you know, I've been coming down here for, what, 8 years now?
Yeah.
You know, the first couple years, the first 2 days, slow down. I get harp. Steve would harp on me.
Harp.
Slow down. You're
slow
going
down.
Too fast.
Slow down.
And I get it. It's not easy. Coming from up north, typically, you know, we are fishing fast. We can't fish pre-spawn.
Right,
up by
right.
me. So, like, that was a totally new thing to me
right.
altogether. And I've definitely noticed that now that I've kind of learned to control that speed, I've been a lot more successful in the last couple of years.
And the thing is this, dude, you're good fellows in the UP.
Yeah.
They can fish.
Oh, yeah. I'm 20 minutes from the UP
right.
border. I can
you
go
can
up there
fish
in April
pre-spawn.
if it's open.
If it's open. And the thing that people don't realize, once these fish hit their caloric reservoir, I'm making this up. There's no, you're never going to read an article on caloric reservoirs. It's in my head, however. once we've reached our caloric reservoir, it becomes snack time. Ooh. Feed up, feed up, feed up, feed up. I'm fat. I don't want to get any fatter. This is as fat as I need to be. It is now snack time. Right? Caloric reserves. How many calories am I burning in a given 24 or 48 hour period to respirate or maintain my flotation or my swim bladder? Ooh, man, then it gets juicy. That's when the real boys are playing musky fishing. How do I catch a sow on the tiniest bait possible with as many eggs in her as possible that's going to weigh 40 pounds? I think I did it three times this week, Josh.
The 51 and the 53. Shit.
But that's you southern guys. Are you open season guys? There's a certain cutoff. Now, what that is, I can't tell you for your body water. But there's a cutoff where they go, I've had enough, right? It's like, take me to a crab leg buffet. I will eat until I'm going to pass out, guaranteed, right? But I might want a Cheddar Bay biscuit every now and again just to maintain that level of, whoa, I'm full. So we get that pre-spawn, that pre-stage. Now, that pre-staging zone on these fish, that might be a deep pocket, but it'll adhere to structural tenets where they're the closest adjacent deep water from a littoral zone that is conducive to spawning. One more time. The closest deep water to a littoral zone that is conducive to spawning. Right? Yep. Shallow to deep transition. That meets the demands of spawning.
Deep water outside creek mouths.
Boom.
Same thing.
Right. Feeder creeks. You know, you got two creeks. You see, you got a north and a south. A lot of Wisconsin lakes, they got a north entry point and a south out, or, you know, whatever. They got two in and one out. One in, one out. Or we got a natural lake where you go, there's nothing bringing water into this. Yeah, there's something. A lot of times there's a little creek. There's a little runoff, rainwater runoff, whatever that might be. But they're going to stage on that north end of stuff, the deep pocket next to the shallow zones.
I totally agree with you on that. I mean, we've seen it down here. You know?
Yeah, you've seen it here, seen it up north. I'm thinking of the lake with the name that has been changed. Jay, you know what lake I'm talking about?
I do, yeah.
Right. Talk about textbook perfect Northwoods Lake.
Every structure you could ever want.
I know where they spawn on that thing, dude. There's no question. You just go bam, bam, bam. Where you got to look at these things from a structural perspective, thermoecology, which is, Jay, what's the old adage? North end gets warmer first. What do you think on that?
It is, and I was thinking about that lake that has the name change, and I was just putting two and two together, and it's just like, yeah, mm-hmm.
Right, and so give me the rule of thumb on that.
It gets more direct sunlight in the spring. You know, the sun angle's still kind of low, and then just north end warms up a little bit quicker. The ice should go off quicker. If that's something you can monitor and on your favorite lake, favorite body of water, and check it out when the ice goes off. It's just, it doesn't go off all at the same time. You know, there might be a few days where there's a lot of open water just on the north end, you know. If it's a degree warmer than the rest of the lake, it's just like that makes all the difference in the world, the spring.
So anyway, Krieger, we had to take a brief moment there for guide trouble. Krieger's boat's not charging, Jay. Welcome to every day of guiding for muskies.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's called the right. on boat blues. Anyway, so we want to look at that north end. You know, from your perspective, Jay, is it shallow water, tannic water up north? What's sort of the game plan for you?
Dark water, yeah, tannic water for sure. Especially the first 2 weeks, yeah. It's just everything's going to be further along, you know,
just
including the metabolism and bait fish moving in shallow, you know, setting up for spawning and stuff like that on a normal year. You know, I hope we have one, but we'll see.
Well,
yeah.
You know, when it got that much ice, who knows? So I think it's going to be late, but you know, if I'm focused on that, which is like a matter of targeting those lakes, if you, that's the beauty of the Northwoods or some of these places where you have multiple options. If you don't have many options, the north end, the north end, the north end, the north end, it seems like it warms up far faster, or anywhere where things are like breaking up quicker. You know, a little of that we've talked about a few years in a row where you do some recon, right? Where's the, like now in some of these locations, if you have a tidbit of ice, or in the next month, where's the ice breaking up now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where does it break up first? Do a drive-by. You're on your lunch break, and you go, it's not breaking up yet, or it's this or that, you know? So that's important. While Josh works on his onboard charger, let's say we're back to, I'm done preaching, post-break. What sort of the thought 3 weeks removed, Jay? So we're legit post-spawn. What are some of your tips or your thoughts on presentations and how you approach that? Couple weeks, we're into week three post-spawn. They've normalized a smidge. What are you doing?
Right. Well, for us, that's, say, well into mid-June, because our season starts in the northern part of Wisconsin here on Memorial Day weekend. So, again, on a normal year, you know, you're starting to see weed growth where that's relevant. And you're starting to see when those bluegills finally come in and start to spawn, because I think they're about last mm-hmm. of everything that we deal with in terms of forage. So when that starts to happen, that's a good time. And fish are generally more active. Hopefully the females are done on a normal spawn year, that they're back off of it and they're feeding and they're catchable.
Right. Got to get and, a decent attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, you know, on any certain given day, you know, my general rule of thumb is it's like if you got good low hanging clouds and stuff like that, it's bucktail time.
Right. A little bit of speed. Is topwater even in the conversation during that?
Yes, absolutely. Because yeah, anytime you got shallow fish, topwater could be very relevant.
So what are the presentation you're thinking?
Topwaters that time of the year would be walk the dog style for me, and going down in size a little bit too, you know, like, you know, big bass Zara spooks.
Uh-huh.
Seen a lot of muskies early season on that. And for us, again, mid-June is still considered very early season. Right. So we're only 2 to 3 weeks into it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like the walk the dog stuff because it's a little, it's erratic. And again, pauses with that, you know,
right,
don't
right.
keep you're it constant. Don't, it, yeah. you're not trying to hypnotize them. You're not trying to burn and cover water. It's not a good bait for covering water. It really isn't, because they're moving laterally so much and they're not moving forward that uh-huh. quickly. Like, you know, most people are running tail baits, you know, like top raiders and stuff like that. They tend to work those fairly quick, and that thing is going to cover water a little bit better. But I like the more erratic nature of the walk the dog, those side-to-side topwaters. Your posed giant jackpot would be a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Suic weagles, baby, or the regular-size weagle. That'd be a good presentation. You know,
I like what you said about laterally, where I think a lot of people will try to coax them out of the shallows. And I think mm-hmm, early mm-hmm. season, if I was going to distill it down to one element, is boat positioning and boat control is mm-hmm. one element, right? Where I want to position my boat where I can work the shallow zone as hard as possible for the longest duration of my cast, which a lot of times is a lateral cast, right? So I'm not drawing fish out of the shallows. I'm keeping my bait in the shallows. Does that seem to bode true for you? What do you think, Josh? Josh is back. Is like, is it a matter of like positioning, like nose into a break line or nose into a shallow where you're fan casting shallow and say you're working a slow week three, they're sort of out of it. Is it is slow blade? Is it slow topwater? Is it lateral casting? Or are you trying to draw them out?
I mean, I don't disagree with anything, you know, that you and Jay have said by any means. I do still throw some of the prop topwater baits mm-hmm. early in the year, but I make sure I'm working them slow, and they're small, and they're very subtle. You know, the little bastard, it's a little loud for me. I don't necessarily throw that right away. But actually, one of my favorite topwater baits early in the year is the little mud puppy. It's super small blade, super subtle, and I've caught, you know, multiple 40s in back-to-back days in early June on that small topwater bait. But no, it definitely is about covering the shallow water. You know, the fish, a lot of times, they're not willing to come, even if they're on the edge, they're not coming off of it.
They won't cover that distance.
No. Yeah, you're not getting a lot of the follows to the boat. You're, you know, usually getting your strikes out that time of the year.
Which bodes to keep that bait shallow. If that's where they're striking or that's where they're staged, don't make them do something they don't want to do. Don't try to draw them out.
Yeah.
Position your boat in a manner where I'm really tight and I'm making, you know, if I've got a shallow break line, again, if I'm targeting 4 to 5 feet, I might have the trolling motor setting in 4 to 5 feet and I'm throwing long bomb casts to cover these shallow, you know, soon to be littoral zones or shallow vegetative zones or emergent vegetation, whatever it might be. That's where they're at. They don't want to chase. They don't necessarily want to chase out to that deeper, somewhat colder water, if you will. They want to hang in that zone. They're expecting that the food's going to be there.
Well, and I know we've talked about this a lot in the past with the Cheez-It theory, you know, proximity. Yeah. if you can make it easy, like, these are lazy fish. The easier you make it for them to eat, the more likely you are to catch them. You know, they don't want to work harder than they have to.
Right. And what he's saying, the famous Cheez-It theory. If I throw a Cheez-It 40 feet away from you, you're not liable to just leap and grab it. However, I hit you right in the nose with it, you might open your mouth. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Make it easy. Do what they expect. Do what they want. Right? There's a reason they're in those zones. There's a reason they're lingering there. They have an expectation of what will happen. If they expected baits to be coming out of shallow zones into deep water, they would stage on the first major break. They're picking off baits that are shallow and will remain shallow and are super easy to get. So therefore, slow down, extended hang time, easy to grab, right? That's what they want. That's the reason they're there. It's the same concept. If you don't go to a steakhouse and order a taco, right? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just like Jay. I showed up at Jay's house and he gave me the menu, and here's Jay's Bistro's menu. And I go, well, you make a taco salad? No, it's a steakhouse. You know, don't go somewhere expecting something they don't have to offer. What muskies are looking at in those shallow zones are small, slow-moving forage. That's why they're there. They've figured out through the eons that they can recoup best in the shallows because of a higher rate of metabolism due to a warmer environment. And they can predate on smaller forage that's slower moving, right? Now, while a small minnow might be fast, it can't cover the distance a 48-inch can, right? But they might eat a couple of those a day, right? Bam, bam. I need just a couple. I'm building up, right? So the post-spawn period is this buildup of caloric intake and caloric output, okay? So you're not going to come into the shallow zones and throw your, you know, Cannonball Junior.
Right.
And you go, why doesn't that work? It works later in the year. It works a month later. Why doesn't it work post-spawn? Well, the reason being is muskies are there for a reason. The reason is slow, small. That's it. Once you get that in your head, you go, I got this figured out. Right? Once we've determined the spawn has taken place, it's over with. You go, I'm going to give them what they want and what they expect is present. Right? So we've got to admit that we need to slow down. We have to admit that we need to downsize. We have to admit that we need to target those shallow zones in a thorough manner because the muskies are there. They don't intend to leave that area. until they've recouped enough caloric value to merit their descent to the depths and like sort of regain back on the highway of musky structure fishing, right? They're out of gas, right? You know, muskies are that's the apex of their life cycle. You know, I personally believe a lot of muskies sort of like that's the end of it. You know, they might slump off in the depths and they're done, like a dying salmon. You know, this old fish might come in and he goes, I'm done, you know, and they slump off and that's it. So the most important thing to a muskie is going through this progression. So they've foregone intake and calories for a hot minute. They are relegated to picking off this tiniest of bait where they go minimal effort, maximum value, minimal effort, maximum value. And that those two components increase, right? Minimal effort, maximum value, minimal effort, maximum value, from the tiniest to tiniest to the up and up where, you know, sometimes these things are eating fry. Whether we want them in or not, they'll eat the tiniest of tiny thing that goes by their face. And they go, huh? That's easy. Snack, snack, snack. Right? They're building up. They're having a snack. They're having a snack. They're having a snack. I think they don't start feeling good to that week three. You know, we sort of got divergent where I'm going like week one, postpone. Week two, postpone. Week three, they go, we're starting to act like muskies again a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. One thing I did want to hit on that we didn't really mention a whole lot about fishing early in the season is one structure that I feel like people overlook a lot is actually wood.
Yeah.
A lot of your fish early in the year will go up to wood to spawn and stuff like that, and that attracts the muskies as well. And, you know, obviously being a lot of weeds up in northern Wisconsin, wood is very, very overlooked.
Oh, it is. We're crappie. You kidding me? Crappie, yeah, right. They want to look at that. And it's funny. Me and Booker have talked about that in the past where it's not as prevalent, it's overlooked. But where it's present up north is dynamite, right? Where whether it be a lay down, stumps, whatever kind of timber is present, you go covers, covers, cover. If it adheres to your structural rules, holy crap, you know. Where a lot of crappies, you know, they're seeking that out. They're looking for it. And you go, you might have two laydowns on a lake in some of these northern, you know, there's not a lot here. However, boom, you know, if you look at some of these, like they have to manicure or present spawning beds. So anything that resembles a natural spawning area for a panfish or some other fish in any shape or form, it's going to be a hotbed.
When those panfish, when they're spawning, are definitely easy targets too, you know?
Right, yeah.
They're easy to pick off.
Easy to pick off. That the thing is, this is like, a lot of times your heightened crappie activity and your musky spawn will sort of overlap early in the season, where nature has provided muskies with a relatively decent meal.
Right, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they'll predate on that as like, okay, here's a relatively decent panfish where I can go, boom, gotcha. You know, and nature has that balance where it creates these scenarios where we have a population of crappie where, you know, they're a numbers populace where muskies are a one-off and the muskies now, well, this is a cheap meal. This is a cheap meal. I can work on this. I can sort of get back into shape. So that's something to look at. You said wood. Creek channels, whether it's obvious or not, is going to be a big deal. Jay, we're rambling on. It's one of those weeks. Josh's boat is not charging. What are your early season thoughts before we just call her? Next week, we're going to do a cold front masterclass. We talked about that.
Okay.
But what are sort of your early season thoughts or concepts we can at least hit some people with as we go our way out here?
Totally agree with Josh, what he just said about wood. I was thinking back, you know, a few years ago, fished a lake with, on the north end, actually, the north end, there were some steeper breaks and, you know, down to relatively deeper water, but it's just like, I think I caught three muskies, nothing huge, but you know, all in the 30s, mm-hmm. and all of them came and we tried
all areas, let's put it right. that way. And they all came off of the wooded shoreline. So, and crappie colored baits. So there's probably some kind of, this is really early season, but it was a fairly warm spring. So there was probably some crappie activity in the wood. There's and like Josh said, don't overlook it. Yep, that's huge.
I, you know, what would you say, Josh? What's your like wrap up early season? Where do we need to be thinking? What's sort of the game plan? Obviously, we're going to cover more of this as we get closer, but getting in people's heads, what is sort of your early thought process?
A lot of it just goes along with what, you know, they've been saying over the years up by us. We talk about all the S's. The spring, you fish shallow, you fish small, and you fish slow. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, that couldn't be any more true. And kind of the stuff that I've been doing, that is where you find the most success early in the year, typically.
Well, I don't think it's north. I think it's everywhere.
Well, right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the adage where, you know, there's been this weird thing. I was just joking about rattle trap. Burn them! No, I mean, it's such a narrow band. It's such a narrow window that it takes place. And, you know, I don't remember the tangent I went on, but I think it's where I was going off on speed and reeling. A lot of Pepsis, folks. The Bassmasters are in town. And me and Krieger, we've been KVD-ing. Still dancing. It's been a long day. But, you know, something, there's something to be said about a finessier approach. And I don't think there's a lot of finessey musky stuff, but I think there's a finessier mental state. Finessier mental state, right? Think about that. We're not going out and we're not bludgeoning for a minute. We're bludgeoners. We are cavemen with lures. Ugh throw, ugh catch, right? We throw a pounder. We throw a 10-inch glide bait, and we go, this is a finesse musky presentation. No, it's not. It's a 10-inch glide bait, you know? Weighs 3/4 of a pound. How are we calling that finesse? Where there's just a certain time where we need to go, okay, let's get real. How do we really focus on speed and depth control in a shallow water setting? Right? Most of the time when we're targeting the shallow water zones as musky fishermen, it's bludgeoning. Throw blades, turn handle, right? Throw bulldog, rip immediately when it hits. How do we contend with 1 to 5 feet, right? How do we focus on this zone as if it was the entirety of the body of water we're fishing, right? What baits excel in 1 to 5 feet? What baits have suspension and hang at 2 feet down? What baits linger? What baits sort of say something? What baits have an attracting property in that shallow of a zone? Not many, right? There's not many baits that sort of excel in that zone. So how do we look at what we've got? How do we augment the baits we have? How do I take a crane bait or a shallow or a slammer and go, how do I get some hang time out of this guy? Right, what do I do to my Titan Junior? Because I need extended hang time out of him. What do I do to him? You know, what do I do to my Warlock? What do I do to my Phantom to get it to hang just a little bit longer where I'm not sort of going out of the zone, right? It's a narrow band. So you start at week one, you start at week two, you start at week three, and we could progressively work deeper. But suspension, hang time, speed control are going to be the core elements of post-spawn success. I don't care if you're in Tennessee or if you're in Tuscaloosa or you're in freaking, you know, Russia. You know, a lot of Russian muskie boys. But, you know, I don't care where you're at in the habitat range. You know, from I should say from freaking Chattanooga to Kenora. How are we going to control our baits? How are we going to get suspension? How are we going to get speed and depth control that still has a triggering action? That's always the balance. Josh said something earlier that resonated with me, which was, and he and I both see it, and Jay, you've seen it, where clients want to see the action of the bait, right? Now, I love what I call a client bait. What's a client bait, Josh?
Top water, bucktails, twitch baits, you know, stuff that's really easy to work.
Because it looks good to the client.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's what they want. Looks good to my eyes, therefore the muskies like it. However, a lot of times they want a Titan Junior or a 6-inch Phantom that goes boom, boring, boom, boom, boring, right? That's the beauty of it. It's like this very unassuming fall off of this slightly rocking bait with the barely moving tail where you go, I wouldn't hit that. Boom, gets crushed.
Yep.
Right? Super slow rise of a Titan Junior. Rising up. Boom, gets crushed. What we visually think looks good. I've dropped Jay. If you hear the buzz, I apologize. Can you hear me, Jay? Jay.
Yeah.
Sorry I dropped you in the floor because you deserve to be dropped like a shaken baby.
No, I'm still here. But I'm still anyway, here.
What looks good to us, what looks good to us as anglers often does not correlate to what muskies want.
No, a lot of guys, you know, especially working those glide baits, I see it a lot. It's a very robotic, rhythmic cadence where it's pop, 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 pop. And realistically, you know, when you're throwing a glide bait, you're trying to look like a wounded fish. A wounded fish is erratic. It's not, you know, it's not a direct cadence that's the same every time. And that's where, you know, just because, oh, this, you know, I got this bait swinging side to side so perfectly.
Well, I got the rhythm going.
Right. Just because looks good and feels good to you doesn't mean it's going to trigger strikes. That's not what they're hitting.
That's why my grandfather did the robot when he was dying. Dun, dun, dun. You know, like, imagine, like, I don't feel so good. I'm going to do the robot. Right. Perfectly. Ah!
Yep.
I mean, I've made that joke with clients who are like, you know, oh, when you're having a heart attack, are you going to do the waltz? You know what I'm saying? Or like, it's so ridiculous where you're literally a puppeteer. As lame as that is, I've said it slightly before. But folks, one day you wake up and you go, I'm a puppeteer with a really long string for control. What? Sorry, I've had way too many Pepsis. Wrap your head around this. Here it comes. I'm going to ruin my career in one statement. You are a puppeteer for fish. Your job is to portray the role of a weak and injured bait fish. The ways of doing this are a rod and a string. The people with the best puppeteer moves end up as professionals. Are you kidding me? It's so stupid. But at its core, I want to tell me I'm wrong, Jay. Am I wrong? Is Joe Bucher a masterful musky puppeteer?
I guess so.
Really? Think about that. It's a puppet show. Welcome to the Puppet Show Podcast, everyone. Grown men doing puppet shows for fish to get them to eat. It's embarrassing. But however, when that hits you in the head, and one day I had it, right? I had this guy that literally said, this is a puppet show. And I went, oh, crap. I get paid to do puppet shows. You are a puppeteer of dead fish. However, it hit me in the head. I went, my job is to manipulate a bait to portray the role that is needed. Whoa. Hello. My job is to portray the role that is needed. Now, what role is needed? The muskies tell me what role they want. It is in my power to manipulate a presentation to portray that role. That is the weirdest way I've ever put fishing. It applies to everything we are doing. It applies to every species. That your job is to portray the role that is needed to get the desired response. And you are conveying a fish. It's so stupid. I just ended my career with the lamest statement ever said. Josh, are you a puppeteer?
I mean, I guess when you put it that way, like, essentially, I mean, when you put it that way, you're That's can you argue analogy. It?
Pretty much what you're doing.
Have you ever heard me say that?
No, I haven't, but I've been drinking. That. That's pretty good.
There's nothing for it. It's just the truth. I mean, it's just, yeah, I'm sorry. Tell me, somebody write me an email and go, you're wrong. And write, like, I want a response for you. We're not puppeteers, we're anglers. No, you're wrong. You are a puppeteer and you spend thousands of dollars a year on new and exciting puppets. Check out the new puppet from Livingston Lures. Man, I just ruined fishing for a lot of people. Like, there's dudes in their truck like, man, I've been fishing my whole life. I ain't doing no damn puppet show. You're doing a puppet show at a $100,000 boat, buddy. You paid $100,000 for a boat to do a puppet show for fish. Sorry. Jay, what's your favorite puppet for early season?
Well, now that you put it that way.
What? Leave it hanging. Did you just quit? Did you just quit? I'm done. Now that I'm done. I work at the puppet shop.
In a couple hours.
Here in a few hours, I'll be at the puppet shop. Folks, call JSE if you want to know what the hot puppet is this season. Anyway, I'm sorry I ruined fishing for everybody. I'll never say it again. Welcome to the Puppeteer 360 podcast. Say goodnight, Jay Bird.
Morning, guys.
Say goodnight, Josh Krieger.
Night, everyone. Appreciate y'all.
Later, puppet.
Must be cheese. Sounds good.